Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are in the process of going through the North Carolina debates. Now, let me be clear. I could easily break out of this content and dive into a plethora of issues, especially with the assistance of the Biden administration and the communist agenda. We could go into all sorts of great marketing. The only thing I ask is that you focus. They are the distraction, and as long as you try to fight their agenda, you will lose. The only winning strategy is to attack them with the Constitution. It is our offense as well as our defense. So clearly, going through these ratification debates is probably the utmost importance that everybody must understand how limited and how defined the Constitution was and how well they actually broke it all down right here within the ratification debates. I mean, come on. So every once in a while, something will jump out. And in the North Carolina debates, there was a man by the name of Mr. Davey who kind of stepped up, and he was talking about the commission. Remember, we've talked about this, and I've been telling you that the convention, the Constitutional Convention, was not exceeding its commission. That the problem with the government that was created, the Congress, the Continental Congress, when I say the government created under the Articles of Confederation, the states were withholding the necessary power that had to be granted. And the states were keeping the convention or any type of progress to be made so that the states would lose the power that was absolutely necessary for the Constitution or the federal government or the general government in this particular case to have the power to do their doggone job. And so it's been constantly brought up, and I've proven to you how every state looked at the Articles of Confederation and the Continental Congress and the powers throughout the states and Continental Congress was absolutely inept. They had a non-functional government, and they were on a fast track of losing everything. Do not think that Spain, who was situated right south of Georgia in a place called Florida, do not think that Spain wanted to kind of march forward when they already had a toehold in Louisiana. And I am here to tell you that France was getting pretty antsy as the communes and the economic problems were getting worse and worse in France. They were literally at the pinnacle of a revolution. A few years later, they had the revolution, and that revolution would have spilled into America because the despot that took over, Bonaparte, would have came to America extracting its pound of flesh that we owed them for the revolutionary debt. Same thing with a lot of the other states in Europe. Britain, you know, they weren't done. They weren't even honoring the treaty. They were impressing our sailors. They were taking our cargo and ships. I'm here to tell you that had these men not understood their higher duty, their inalienable rights to casting off government and putting government into the proper context to serve the people that it was supposed to do, we would probably be under the English rule or would be speaking a different language today. I am here to tell you that these men understood their obligation and that the commission was the problem. That was the cabal that had to be broken. That the states were the center of the corruption at that point in time. And in some respects, everybody's got blood on their hands. But let me get into what Mr. Davey states as soon as I get through these obligatories, because You know, this show is sponsored by republicreview.org, and this is the only show that gives you these academic facts, the evidence necessary to put things into perspective so that we can literally and effectually take back our constitutional republic. As you know, we have a comment line, 425-270-5416. Got a few calls on it today. Just calls. Nothing to put up here. So I do get calls on this because this is also on the Reclaiming the Republic page. And some people, you know, just have some questions. How do they get involved and so forth? But please, if you've got a question, and even if you don't want to identify yourself, don't worry about it. If you don't even want me to air your comment, you just would like to hear my response, then that's fine. I do understand that there's apprehension by a lot of people. They don't like their voice, or they don't think they sound good. That's okay. I mean, just give us a call. I know that there are people out there, and I've actually had some people call, but we know that we have a much larger audience than what we have. And unfortunately, there's way too many people that are, I need to listen more. I need to understand more before I can. Really? This goes to the same question I had in my constitutional minutes. My last constitutional minutes was clear. It came right out and said, state legislators, what do you deem as the necessary emergency to call for an emergency session? If the liberties that are, have been taken and the remaining liberties in our Constitution stands in jeopardy, are you telling me that that does not constitute an emergency? To have a state emergency legislative session to put into perspective very specifically the overreaches of the federal government. See, the Convention of States people out there are saying the only tool that they have is the Convention of States. That is absolutely incorrect. An emergency session by every state legislature, or by at least one state legislature, to call out all the other states, just like what Madison and Jefferson did, that is the actual process. And the Convention of States are trying to convince people that they're the only way. You got to do it this way. And you know what? People are listening to these lies and this deceit. Why? Because they're getting desperate, because they see what's going on in the Biden administration. I hope we all live to see the day. And as a matter of fact, I hope it's very soon that we can see every single treasonous bastard and out there, male and female, actually do the perp walk, have their due process in court, and hang for their treason. We need a purging of this corruption this is all a violation of the supreme law of the land. Oh, well, no, it's not. It absolutely is. And we have to stop mincing words. I mean, the pithy comment that Candace Owens made a really good comment. We got to stop calling them Democrats and we got to call them American communists. Well, they're communists. As far as I'm concerned, we have to actually start calling things for what they are, and we have to start asserting our authority. And we need your help to do this. This is why you are very critical. We need you to get involved. We need you to make sure you make it to Red Pill Expo. I will be there. My healing and everything else is coming along, so I will be there, and I'm hoping to see you there. We're inviting your state legislators. If you can't make it, at least send an email or a phone call to your state legislator, especially if they're quasi-conservative, and say, I would like to make sure you go to the Red Pill Expo in Rapid City to meet with all of the other state legislators. We have a room set aside. We were promised by, J. Edward Griffin staff that we get the legislators there. They will give us a room so that we can kind of do a meet and greet and do a real rundown, quick and dirty, what's got to get done and how we can start working effectually in taking back one of the state legislatures by getting rid of rhinos and getting rid of the communist agenda and moving everything forward. We need everybody's shoulder, and hands on the target so that we can actually start pushing, work equals force times distance. Let's get some work done. and we need you to actually apply some force and give us some distance. We all need to be working. Yours truly, I'm doing all of this by the blessings of our Lord and Savior, by our Heavenly Father. I mean, by God Himself, the blessings that He has given me and my wife, it gives me the opportunity to do these things. Any money that I make on the sale of my books, any money that comes in, if I make a speaking, you know, what do they call that, an honorarium, if I make a fee for speaking or any money I make, it goes right back into paying for my travel to doing these things. And so I want to thank those few who have already responded by buying my book, and I've got those copies out. So if you want to buy my book and get a special deal for Father's Day, Mother's Day, whatever, just make sure that in the instructions you tell me, if this is a gift, who the person's name is, so that I, when I sign it and personalize it and provide a message to that person, then they will, you know, I'll put their name on it, not yours. Anyway, let me move on and let me get into the content, because I think that this is why we're here, and this is really, this is the most important message. And again, this isn't my message. This is the framers. This is the most important message speaking from the dust of America. Our history speaks to us in these documents as to what was defined regarding this general government and what we can do and what we have to do. And so with these two promos, we'll be right back. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so we're back to these comments regarding the commission exceeding their powers, exceeding their commission, and what have you. And this is what Mr. Davey says. Mr. Chairman, the observation of the reverend gentleman is grounded, I suppose, on a supposition that the federal convention exceeded their powers. This objection has been industriously circulated, but I believe on a candid examination, the prejudice on which this error is founded will be done away. As I had the honor, sir, to be a member of the convention, it may be expected I would answer an objection personal in its nature and which contains rather a reflection on our conduct than an objection of the merits of the Constitution. after repeated and decisive proofs of the total inefficiency of our general government, the states deputed the members of the convention to revise and strengthen it. And permit me to call to your consideration that whatever form of Confederate government they might devise or whatever powers they might propose to give this new government, no part of it was binding until the whole Constitution had received the solemn assent of the people. What was the object of the mission? To decide upon the most effectual means of removing the defects of our federal union. This is, and he actually quotes this, what was the object of our mission? Quote, to decide upon the most effectual means of removing the defects of our federal union. Close quote. This is a general discretionary authority to propose any alteration they thought proper or necessary. Were not the state legislatures afterwards to review the proceedings? Is it not immediately through their recommendation that the plan of the convention is submitted to the people? And this plan must still remain a dead letter or receive its operation from the fiat of this convention? Although the federal convention might recommend the concessions of the most extensive powers, yet they could not put one of them into execution. What have the convention done that can merit the species of censure? They have only recommended a plan of government containing some additional powers to those enjoyed under the present feeble system. Amendments not only necessary, but were the express object of the deputation. When we investigate this system candidly and accurately and compare all its parts with one another, we shall find it absolutely necessary to confirm these powers in order to secure the tranquility of the states and the liberty of the people. Perhaps it would be necessary to form a true judgment of this important question to state some events and develop some of those defects which gave birth to the late convention and which have produced this revolution in our federal government. With the indulgence of the committee, I will attempt this detail with as much precision as I am capable. The general objects of the Union are first to protect us against foreign invasion. Now, I gotta highlight this, my friends, because what the heck is going on right now? What the heck is going on as we look at our southern border? And right there, clear in Article 4, I've gone through this many times. You see my immigration video. We are under an invasion. So the general objects of this union are first to protect us from foreign invasion. Second, to defend us against internal commotions and insurrections. And third, to promote the commerce, agriculture, and manufactures of America, not of a particular product. But again, The federal responsibility is to promote the production that is coming from the states to go abroad and to ensure what's coming in is fair, is safe, or what have you, and is taxed by the federal government. When they talk about commerce, that was the extent. It was really about the importation of commerce from foreign states and making sure that as we export our goods, it is, you know, promoted and given opportunity in other markets and so forth. We were the ones that invoked this free market system. And so anyway, to promote the agriculture and manufacturers of America, these objects are requisite to make us a safe, happy people, and they cannot be attained without a firm and efficient system of union. As to the first, we cannot obtain any effectual protection from the present Confederation. It is indeed universally acknowledged. It's its inadequacy in this case is one of the greatest defects. Examine its ability to repel an invasion. In the late Glorious War, its weakness was unequivocally experienced. It is well known that Congress had a discretionary right to raise men and money, but they had no power to do either. In order to preclude the necessity of examining the whole progress of its imbecility, permit me to call to your recollection one single instance when the last great stroke was made which humbled the pride of Britain and put us in possession of peace and independence. So low were the finances and credit of the United States that our army could not move from Philadelphia until the minister of His Most Christian Majesty was prevailed upon to draw bills to defray the expense of the expedition. These were not obtained on the credit or interest of Congress, but by the personal influences of the commander-in-chief. Had this great project miscarried, what fatal events might have ensued? It is very moderate presumption that what has happened may happen again. The next important consideration which is involved in the external powers of the Union are treaties. Without a power in the federal government to compel, and you've heard these same comments in the other states, to compel the performance of our engagements with foreign nations, we shall be perpetually involved in destructive wars. The Confederation is extremely defective in this point also. I shall only mention to British treaty as a satisfactory proof of this melancholy fact. It is well known that although this treaty was ratified in 1784, it is required of the sanction of law of North Carolina in 1787, and that our enemies, presuming on the weakness of our federal government, have refused to deliver up several important posts within the territories of the United States and still hold them to our shame and disgrace. It is unnecessary to reason on facts, the perilous consequences of which must in a moment strike every mind capable of reflection. The next head under which the general government may be considered is the regulation of commerce. The United States should be empowered to compel foreign nations into commercial regulations that were either founded on the principles of justice or reciprocal advantages. Has the present Confederation effected any of these things? Is it not our commerce equally unprotected abroad by arms and negotiations? Nations have refused to enter into treaties with us. What was the language of the British court on the proposition of this kind? Such as would insult the pride of any man of feeling and independence. Quote, you can make engagements, but you cannot compel your citizens to comply to them. We derive greater profits from the present situation of your commerce than we could expect under a treaty, and you have no kind of power that can compel us to surrender any advantage to you. Close quote. This was the language of our enemies, and while our government remains as feeble as it has been, no nation will form any connection with us that will involve the relinquishment of the least advantage. What has been the consequence? A general decay of trade, the rise of imported merchandise, the fall of produce, and an uncommon decrease of the value of lands. Foreigners have been reaping the benefits and emoluments which our citizens ought to enjoy. An unjustifiable perversion of justice has pervaded almost all of the states, and everything presented to our view of a spectacle, spectacle of public poverty and private wretchedness. While this is true representation of our situation, can our general government recur to the ordinary expedients of loans? During the late war, large sums were advanced to us by foreign states and individuals. Congress have not been able to pay even the interest of these debts with honor and punctuality. The requisitions made on the states have been everywhere unproductive, and some of them have not paid a stiver. These debts are a part of the price of our liberty and independence, debts which ought to be regarded with gratitude and discharged with honor. Yet many of the individuals who lent us money in the hour of our distress are now reduced to indigence in consequence of our delinquency. So low and hopeless are the finances of the United States that the year before last, Congress was obligated to borrow money even to pay the interest of the principal, which we had borrowed before. This wretched resource of turning interest into principal is the most humiliating and disgraceful measure that a nation could take, and approximates the rapidity to absolute ruin. Yet it is the inevitable and certain consequences of such a system as the existing Confederation. You know, I go through this, and I know this is long, this is meaty, but this is giving you a clear snapshot of what the problem was and what they were really trying to do. And that's why we're going through the commerce and all of this. We'll be right back after these next two promos. Thank you so much. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so moving on, Mr. Davies says this. There are several other instances of imbecility in that system. It cannot secure us the enjoyment of our own territories or even the navigation of our own rivers. The want of power to establish a uniform rule for naturalization throughout the United States is also no small defect, as it must unavoidably be productive of disagreeable controversies with foreign nations. The general government ought, in this as in every other instance, to possess the means of preserving the peace and tranquility of the Union. A striking proof of the necessity of this power recently happened in Rhode Island. A man who had run off with a vessel and cargo, the property of some merchants in Holland, took sanctuary in that place. Application was made for him as a citizen of the United Netherlands by the minister, but as he had taken the oath of allegiance, the state refused to deliver him up and protected him in his villainy. It had not been for the peculiar situation of the states at the time, fatal consequences might have resulted from such conduct, and the contemptible state of Rhode Island might have involved the whole Union in a war. I should have said Rogue Island, right? Anyway, so he goes on into this concept of encroachments, and he says, the encroachments of some states on the rights of others and of all of those of the Confederacy are incontestable proofs of the weakness and imperfection of this system. Maryland lately passed a law granting exclusive privileges to her own vessels contrary to the Articles of Confederation. Congress had neither power nor influence to alter it. All they could do was to send a contrary recommendation. It is provided by the sixth article of the Confederation that no compact shall be made between two or more states without the consent of Congress. Yet this has been recently violated by Virginia and Maryland, and also by Pennsylvania and New Jersey. North Carolina and Massachusetts have had a considerable body of forces on foot, and those in this state raised for 2 years, notwithstanding the expense, provision in the Confederation that no force should be kept up by any state in time of peace. As to internal tranquility, without dwelling on the unhappy commotions in our own back counties, I will only add that if rebellion in Massachusetts had been planned and executed with any kind of ability, that state must have been ruined, for Congress would not in a situation render them assistance. Another object of the Federal Union is to promote the agriculture manufacturers of the states, objects in which we are so nearly concerned. Commerce is the nurse of both. The merchant finishes the planter with such articles as he cannot manufacture himself and finds him a market for his produce. Agriculture cannot flourish if commerce languishes. They are mutually dependent on each other. Our commerce, as I have before observed, is unprotected abroad without regulation at home. And in this and many of the states ruined by partial iniquitous laws which, instead of having a tendency to protect property and encourage industry, led to the depreciation of one and destroy every incitement to the other, laws which basically warranted and legalized the payment of just debts by paper, which represents nothing, or property of very trivial value. And so we can find a large piece of information, pieces of information regarding the failures of the Articles of Confederation and what was really needed in this new government or the new system. And as a matter of fact, when you start looking, probably the best resource for this, and I don't necessarily say bad things about the Federalist Papers other than that they're insightful, but one of the most insightful things about the Federalist Papers is right there around Federalist Paper 39, 40, 41, where Madison actually goes through and proves that they basically kept the Federalist Papers almost word for word in the Constitution. They just rearranged everything and made sure that the powers that they were delegated, actually they had the ability to enforce those powers. So they granted them the necessary power to actually execute the responsibilities that they were giving them. Now we go into Mr. Gowdy, who makes a comment regarding slaves and the taxation of slaves. He says, "Mr. Chairman, this clause of taxation will give an advantage to some states over others. It will be oppressive to southern states. Taxes are equal to our representation. To augment our taxes and increase our burdens, our Negroes are to be represented. If a state has 50,000 Negroes, she is to send one representative for them. I wish only to represent with Negroes, especially if it increases my burdens." Mr. Davy says this, "Mr. Chairman, I will endeavor to obviate what the gentleman last upset. I wonder to see gentlemen so precipitate and hasty on a subject of such awful importance. It ought to be considered that some of us are slow to apprehension, or not having those quick conceptions and luminous understandings of which other gentlemen may be possessed. The gentleman, quote, does not wish to be represented with Negroes, close quote. This, sir, is an unhappy species of population, but we cannot at present alter their situation. The eastern states had great jealousies on this subject. They insisted that their cows and horses be equally entitled to representation, that the one was property as well as the other. It became our duty. So, my friends, do you hear what was just said? When they were saying that they wanted representation for their slaves, and the northern or eastern states pointed out, hey, you can't do that. You consider that property. They're not freemen. And they said, well, you know, they're people, you know. And they said, well, we want representation for our cows and so forth. Anyway, it became our duty, on the other hand, to acquire as much weight as possible in the legislation of the Union. And as the northern states were more populous in whites, this only could be done by insisting that a certain proportion of our slaves could make a part of the computed population. It was attempted to form a rule of representation from a compound ratio of wealth and population, but on consideration, it was found impracticable to determine the comparative value of lands and other property in so extensive a territory with any degree of accuracy, and population alone was adopted as the only practicable rule on criterion of representation. It was urged by the deputies of the eastern states that a representation of 2/5 would be of little utility, and that their entire representation would be unequal and burdensome, that in a time of war, slaves rendered a country more vulnerable while its defenses devolved upon its free inhabitants. On the other hand, we insisted, in time of peace, they contributed by their labor to the general wealth as well as other members of the community, that as rational beings, they had a right of representation, and in some instances might be highly useful in war. On these principles, the eastern states gave the matter up and consented to the regulations as it has been read with the 3/5 rule. I hope these reasons will appear satisfactory. It is the same rule or principle in which was proposed some years ago by Congress and assented to by 12 of the states. It may wound the delicacy of the gentleman from Guilford, Mr. Gowdy, but I hope he will endeavor to accommodate his feelings to the interest and circumstances of his country. When he says of his country, what he means is of the state. The state of North Carolina. And then Mr. Galloway stood up and said that he did not object to the representation of Negroes so much as he did with the fewness of the number of representatives. He was surprised how we came to have but 5, including those intended to represent Negroes, that in his humble opinion, North Carolina was entitled to a number independent of the Negroes. And so I don't know how he got into these suppositions, but when it came down to it, the limit was put out as an arbitrary limit until the 1790 census, and then every state was going to have its apportionment reconfigured based on the census, because they didn't have at that point in time the accurate numbers. All they had were estimates from different census and so forth. Anywho, as we move forward, and I'm hoping that I do like the North Carolina debates. It provides you some really good common views and some a view on the slavery side as well as an objective view on that. Common law, and this was by Mr. Iredell. Mr. Chairman, the objection would be right if there was no other mode of punishing, but it is evident that an officer may be tried by a court of common law. He may be tried in such a court for common law offenses. And so what I'll do, because this is kind of a short one and we're not even halfway through, I will take a quick pause for this quick 2 promos. So we'll be right back after these 2 promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so we'll pick it up from where we started in this next citation. And again, this is Mr. Iredell. Mr. Chairman, the objection would be right if there was no other mode of punishing, but it is evident that an officer might be tried by a court of common law. He may be tried in such a court for common law offenses, whether impeached or not, as it is to be presumed that inferior tribunals will be constituted, there will be no occasion for going away always to the Supreme Court. Even in cases where the federal courts have exclusive jurisdiction, where this exclusive cognizance is not given up, redress may be had in common law courts in the state. And I have no doubt such regulations will be made as will put it out of the power of officers to distress the people with impunity. I want you to understand the importance of this, because this is pointing out that we will always have common law courts to be able to go after our politicians and so forth. And when the federal court basically passed in 1935 that they weren't going to recognize common law courts, they don't have the power or authority to do that. This is why states need to start using it, and they need to start using it with consensus. And we'll get into all of that when we delve into common law as a very specific topic. I just want you to understand that this right here is really, really, really important. And so we are making a note of that. Important. Bah, bah, bah. So that when we get to that, I will bring this back up to show that the terms and definitions of the Constitution guarantee the use of common law courts. That the federal court just can't say, well, they're antiquated and out. Common law is the law of the land, and it is the basis of law for every state in this union. Even though Louisiana has civil law for its recognized law, that, as of the 14th Amendment, is unconstitutional. They had to be, basically, the 14th Amendment forced common law upon all states. Anyway, Governor Johnson then speaks up to what Mr. Iredell said, and he observed that men who were in high offices could not become by the ordinary course of justice, but when called before this high tribunal and convicted, they would be stripped of their dignity and reduced to the rank of fellow citizens, and then the courts of common law might proceed against them. Now, one of the things that if you didn't know, Congress and your state legislatures have put in law that while they're in session, unless they've committed treason or such a terrible act, they have immunity while they are in session. You can't arrest them or anything else. Well, let's start defining and clarifying treason. And because treason is when you violate your oath of office and not supporting, or you deliberately violate the Constitution. But that goes to Section 3 of the 14th Amendment and so forth. So anyway, let me just kind of plow forward to this next comment. And this is by Mr. McLean. The president is the superior officer who, and by the way, North Carolina had a lot of discussion regarding the impeachment process, one of the most. I think North Carolina and Virginia was the most that discussed impeachments. Anyway, the president is the superior officer who is to see the laws put into execution. He is amenable for any maladministration in his office. Were it possible to suppose that the president should give wrong instructions to his deputies, whereby the citizens would be distressed, they would have redress in the ordinary courts of common law. But says he, parties injured must go to the seat of government of the United States and get redress there. I do not think it will be necessary to go to the seat of the general government for that purpose. No person will be obliged to attend there, but an extraordinary occasion for Congress will form as to render it unnecessary for the inhabitants to go thither, but on such occasions. And so they kind of go back and forth and they talk more about the impeachments and so forth. And here's an interesting comment that is on the same day made by Mr. McLean. And he goes, Mr. Chairman, the Reverend gentleman from Guilford has made an objection which astonishes me more than anything I have ever heard. He seems to be acquainted with the history of England, but he ought to consider whether his historical references apply to this country. He tells us of triennial elections being changed to septennial elections. This is an historical fact we well know, and the occasion on which it happened is equally well known. They talk as loudly of constitutional rights and privileges in England as we do here, but they have no written constitution. They have a common law, which has been altered from year to year for a very long period. Magna Carta and the Bill of Rights, these they look upon as their constitution, yet this is such a constitution as universally considered Parliament can change. Blackstone, in his admirable commentaries, tells us that the power of Parliament transcendent and absolute and can do and undo everything that is natural, that is not naturally possible. The act, therefore, to which the Reverend gentleman alludes was not unconstitutional. Has any man said that the legislature can deviate from this constitution? The legislature is to his guided by the Constitution, they cannot travel beyond its bounds. Now, when he says they can't travel beyond its bounds, they can't do it legitimately like Parliament can. They have to violate the Constitution. This is why, if everybody recognizes that all of our public servants are violating, you know, in business, we have this thing called a first and final. When somebody violates the law or the policies or protocols or processes or what have you of a corporation, the corporate culture, the corporate law, governance, or what have you, then usually that person gets a first and final. Usually, unless the offense is really bad and well known. But in our case, we have a lot of public servants who have actually been indoctrinated into believing they can do all of these things. So we have a real problem. And I think what needs to really happen is as we start moving forward, we need to start letting these public servants know as we start moving up the ladder. This is your first and final warning. You must comply and support the Constitution. You fail to do so, because we know you've been failing to do so up to this point. You continue to fail and you not support this Constitution, you will be removed with prejudice. And we will, you know, we'll ban you from public service in accordance with Section 3 if we can't prove treason upon you and hang you. Then people, my friends, then these public servants, starting at the local level and working our way up, they will get the message, especially as a couple of these, you know, ingrates and some of these communist revolutionaries actually dangle from the end of a rope. Once people start hanging and they understand that the law is the law and it is the supreme law of the land and we're holding them to it, there's been no constitutional change followed by, you know, that was predicated by the Article 5 amendment process. So in other words, if there's no amendment to allow them to do all these shenanigans, then these shenanigans are a clear violation of the Constitution and we must hold them accountable. Anyway, moving on, he says, the Reverend gentleman says that though the representatives are to be elected for 2 years, they may pass an act prolonging their appointment for 20 years or for natural life without any violation of the Constitution. Is it possible for any common understanding or sense to be put to this construction upon it? Such an act, sir, would be a palpable violation of the Constitution. Where they attempt it, sir, the country would rise against them. That's what we need to do. We need to start rising at the county level against our county patrons, our public servants. We need to rise against our state public servants. We need to make sure, and this is why the red states are the easiest ways to do this, because most everybody in the red states want to see this compliance. They want to see this restoration occur. Anyway, moving on, Mr. McLean says, after such an unwarrantable suggestion as this, any objection may be made to this Constitution. It is necessary to give power to the government. I would ask that the gentleman who is so much afraid it will destroy our liberties, why is he not as much afraid of our state legislature? For they have more power than we are now proposing to give this general government. They have an unlimited control over the purse and sword, yet no complaints are made. Why is he not as much afraid of that legislature will call out the militia to destroy our liberties? Will the militia be called out by the general government to enslave the people, to enslave their friends, their families, themselves? The idea of the militia being made use of as an instrument to destroy our liberties is almost too absurd to merit a refutation. It cannot be supposed that the representatives of our general government will be worse men than the members of our state government. Will we be the fools to send our greatest rascals to the general government? We must be both fools as well as villains to do so. Now we'll leave it there. We've got a lot more to go through. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic and we need your help. God bless. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.